Imagine standing in just this freezing, snow-swallowed forest in rural Finland.
Sounds intense already.
Right. You are there for a one-month artist residency. And the overarching theme of this whole thing is silence, awareness, existence. Yeah. And the nearest town is like miles away. And on day two, without much warning at all, the organizers just simply cut the Wi-Fi.
Oh, brutal.
Exactly. Okay, let's unpack this because we aren't looking at some trendy digital detox diary or, a wellness retreat brochure today.
No, definitely not.
We are diving into a really rigorous 2026 human computer interaction research paper. It's titled Liebei at a Hushed Sanctuary: Layered Reflections on an Artist Residency. And the core mission of this deep dive, the question at the center of this research, is actually pretty profound.
Yeah, it really is.
It's asking, how do we find focus and presence in an era that's basically engineered for relentless digital overload?
Right. And, the field of human-computer interaction, or HCI, is traditionally obsessed with removing friction.
Right, making things smoother.
Exactly. The entire discipline is sort of built around making software faster, minimizing the time it takes to complete a task, maximizing user engagement metrics. But this specific paper, it pivots completely.
It really goes in the opposite direction.
It does. It investigates this concept known as techno-spirituality. It's looking at how a traditional Chinese aesthetic philosophy called Lu Bai, which translates directly to empty space, how that could fundamentally alter the underlying architecture of the technology we design.
I love that tension, Taking a philosophy of emptiness and trying to apply it to software engineering, which is inherently about like filling screens with data.
Yeah, it's a massive contradiction.
Right. So to really grasp how they tested this, we have to look at the researcher at the center of the paper, Sarah. She travels to this Finnish sanctuary in the dead of winter.
Yep, the most isolated time to go.
Truly. And the environment forces an extreme level of isolation. They enforce these strict silent weekends.
Not just quiet, but silent.
Totally silent. And every day, the residents gather for 30 minutes of group meditation where there is absolutely no talking, no guided visualization. The only auditory cue is just the single resonant strike of a singing bowl.
And it is crucial to note here that Sarah did not arrive at this sanctuary with an empty mind, or I mean, even an empty suitcase.
Oh, far from it.
But as a technologist, she brought a very specific, highly engineered prototype with her.
Of course she did.
Yeah, her original goal was to wear this biosensor device that would track her physiological data, so her heart rate, galvanic skin response while she meditated.
Wow.
And she then planned to translate that biometric data into real-time interactive visual projections right inside the meditation hall.
Which, I mean, that feels like bringing a spreadsheet to a poetry reading.
That is a perfect way to put it.
I understand the impulse, I do, but why are we so obsessed with quantifying our relaxation?
It's a modern condition, really.
It's like the modern brain simply cannot accept that an experience actually happened, unless a smartwatch spits out a sleep score or like a meditation badge at the end of it. We just equate data collection with actual living.
What's fascinating here is how quickly the physical environment rejected that exact
Oh,
premise.
totally.
Because the prevailing dogma in tech is that you cannot improve what you cannot measure.
Right. The classic Silicon Valley mindset.
Exactly. But enveloped by the vast, auditory blankness of the Finnish winter and suddenly cut off from cloud computing, Sarah realizes that deploying this biometric prototype completely misses the point.
Yeah, it's just adding to the noise.
Precisely. She realizes that trying to capture and project the data of her meditation is just another form of noise.
So she pivots.
Yeah.
She abandons the biosensors entirely and embraces a concept the paper refers to as bricolage.
Right, bricolage,
Yeah.
which is the practice of creation through improvisation.
Like using whatever is just lying around.
Exactly. Using whatever materials happen to be immediately available rather than specialized pre-planned tools. In HCI, it represents a huge departure from rigid top-down design.
Because she brought, what was it, Polaroids?
Yeah, she had brought a stack of discarded, failed Polaroid photos with her. She originally just intended to use them as bookmarks.
That's amazing.
But stripped of her digital tools, she begins using these physical analog scraps as her canvas. And this shift really aligns with a growing movement called slow technology.
slow technology.
Right. The mechanics of slow tech don't aim for task efficiency. Instead, designers intentionally build systems that cultivate reflection.
So by abandoning her prototype, she was actually doing exactly what she was supposed to do.
She was embodying the core tenet of the residency, yeah. Letting the environment dictate the action, rather than just imposing a technological framework onto it.
And the guiding philosophy behind this improvised art she started making is, like we mentioned, the namesake of the paper, Liubai.
Yes. And Liubai is an incredibly nuanced concept. The literal Chinese characters mean leave white or leave blank.
Okay.
The paper grounds this theory by sharing this lovely detail about Sarah's mother, who was a traditional Chinese painter.
Oh, right.
When painting a landscape, her mother would deliberately leave, like, large portions of the paper entirely untouched by ink.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though, because in a lot of Western design, empty space is treated as a problem to be solved, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
If there is blank space on a dashboard, we just invent a new widget to fill it. It's a sort of horror vacuum, like a fear of emptiness.
We hate a vacuum.
We do.
Yeah.
But with Liubai, that blank space isn't just an unfinished corner. I was thinking about this, and it's kind of like the negative space in the famous FedEx logo arrow.
Oh, the hidden arrow between the E and the X?
Exactly. Once you see the empty space as an actual thing, it changes how you read the whole picture. With Liubai, it is a structural feature. That untouched paper actively represents the most massive elements of the physical world, like the boundless sky, the fog, or just an infinite ocean.
The emptiness is generative.
Yeah.
It's not a void. It's the medium that allows the painted elements to breathe and actually exist. And Sarah takes this visual concept of Liubai,
yeah,
and she maps it onto the auditory environment she was experiencing.
Right.
She realizes that the silence of the forest isn't just the absence of sound. It's an active generative force.
Mm-hmm.
It is the canvas itself.
Man, if we pull that back to UI and software design, it completely changes how you view user interfaces.
It really does.
Just think about the mechanics of like an infinite scroll feed on social media versus a paginated system where you actually have to click next page.
Oh, that's a great comparison.
Right. The infinite scroll fundamentally eliminates Liubai. It removes all visual and functional empty space, ensuring you never encounter a natural pause.
Never. Just constant consumption.
Yeah. But a page break, however, is functional emptiness. It introduces cognitive friction. It forces a moment of reflection where the user has to actively decide, do I want to keep consuming this?
That is an excellent way to conceptualize the mechanics of it. The pause requires interaction. The paper emphasizes that silence, much like visual white space, is dialectical.
Meaning it's a two-way street.
Exactly. It demands a response from the observer. The authors explore how this concept of the unfilled appears across different cultures and political spheres as well.
Yeah, they mention a few other concepts.
They look at the Finnish concept of hiljaisuus, which treats silence not as awkwardness, but as a mechanism for social harmony and like a bridge to nature.
I love that.
They also discuss the Japanese concept of ma, which is the crucial space or pause in between structural elements that gives a room or even a conversation its actual shape.
And they also highlight how this unfilled space can function politically, right? The paper mentions the white paper protests in China.
Yes, they do.
And just to be completely clear for you listening, we are impartially reporting the contents of this study here. We're not taking any political stance.
Right, just covering the research.
But the researchers point to this event where citizens held up completely blank pieces of A4 paper to demonstrate how a literal blank canvas can become a highly charged, unspoken language of resistance against censorship.
It proves that when you remove explicit content, the empty space absorbs the context of its surroundings. In design terms, when you leave a gap, you grant the user the dignity of interpreting the space rather than spoon-feeding them an endless stream of predetermined data.
I see the theory, and it makes sense, but I'm really curious about the practice.
How it actually worked.
Yeah. We have this elegant, abstract concept of Liubai, but how does that actually manifest when you are physically isolated in the snow? The paper divides this experience into two distinct modes, right? Solitary noticing and shared silence.
Right. So the practice of deep noticing is the primary mechanism that kicks in when your cognitive load is drastically reduced. The paper shares this brilliant vignette about Sarah walking alone in the forest. To prevent the artists from getting lost in a landscape where the snow has literally erased all the trails, the organizers tied these subtle red and blue tape markers around the trays.
So she's just out there wandering.
Yeah, Sarah is walking, navigating purely by these minimal visual cues, when she decides to take a field audio recorder, put on noise-canceling headphones, and actively listen to the forest.
Which, I have to say, sounds completely paradoxical. Why would you use noise-canceling headphones to listen to an environment that is already practically silent?
It does seem weird, right? But it's because snow is highly acoustically absorbent.
Oh, true.
It dampens ambient noise, creating a very muted baseline. By using the technology to actively amplify that muted environment, she starts picking up the microscopic acoustic details of the physical world.
Like what?
Like she hears the faint scattering of snow dislodging from a pine branch. She hears the rhythmic rustle of her own coat. She isn't using the technology to escape her environment, which is, you know, what we normally do with headphones.
Mm-hmm.
She's using it to hyperlink her senses directly into the immediate physical space.
That is so cool. And that leads to one of my absolute favorite moments in the paper, the midnight UFO experience.
Oh, yes. The frozen lake.
It's so good. It's a Friday night, deep into one of the mandatory silent weekends, and the residents start hearing this bizarre, deep, reverberating sound echoing from the nearby frozen lake.
Because the ice is just beginning to crack and shift as the season slowly turns.
Right. And rather than talking about it, the residents just wordlessly gather at the edge of the lake in the freezing darkness.
And Sarah brings that same field recorder.
Yes. They stand there in absolute silence, passing the headphones back and forth. They are listening to these massive, amplified, almost alien transmissions of the ice tearing itself apart.
It's like a spontaneous, shared midnight ritual.
Exactly. Which brings us to the second mode, shared silence. And I have to ask, doesn't the idea of a group of strangers sitting in silence usually breed immense social anxiety?
Oh, for most people, absolutely.
Because if I'm in an elevator with someone and nobody speaks, it feels agonizing.
In everyday society, yes, because our social programming dictates that silence is a conversational failure.
Yeah, like somebody dropped the ball.
Exactly. We view it as a void we are personally responsible for filling. But when the established rule of the environment is Liu Bei, when silence is the intended architecture, that social pressure completely evaporates.
That makes a lot of sense.
The paper details a 15-kilometer collective hike the residents took, a group of people walking for hours without uttering a single syllable.
And because they couldn't speak, they had to invent alternative mechanisms for coordination.
They had to get creative.
Yeah, the paper notes how they relied on gestures or sharing snacks wordlessly or even using exaggerated facial expressions to highlight something in the landscape.
And their pacing, too.
Right. If one person slowed their pace to examine a frozen blanche, the entire group naturally decelerated to match that new rhythm.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, silence transitioned from an absence of noise into an active medium of care.
A medium of care. I like that.
In HCI and behavioral science, there is a concept known as entrainment.
Entrainment.
Yeah. Entrainment is the biological and social synchronization of individuals to an external rhythm or, you know, to each other. By stripping away verbal language, the group achieved a profound physical entrainment.
They just synced up.
They became hyper-attuned to the physiological cues and needs of the people around them.
And nowhere is the biological reality of that entrainment more obvious than during the laughing meditation.
Oh my goodness, yes. It is the perfect case study of what happens when the formal structure of silence breaks down, but the entrainment holds strong.
Okay, so picture this. Four of the residents are sitting in the meditation hall. The 30-minute session begins with the strike of a DIY singing bowl. But this particular bowl produces this incredibly weird, overzealous, metallic warble. And you know that highly specific feeling of being in a deeply serious, quiet place like a lecture hall or a library. And the sheer inappropriateness of laughing suddenly makes everything hilarious.
Well, the phenomenon of the forbidden laugh. It creates immense physiological tension.
Exactly. So these four adults are sitting there relying on sheer willpower to maintain the sanctity of the meditation. And then someone in the room just lets out a microscopic snort.
Just a tiny one.
Just a snort. And that breaks the dam. For 30 excruciating minutes, they sit there, tears streaming down their faces, their bodies physically vibrating with suppressed laughter, desperately trying not to ruin the silence.
It sounds agonizing.
But the authors note that the shared effort of holding back that laughter actually forged a deeper, more profound bond between them than if they had just laughed out loud and moved on.
It really vividly illustrates what HCI researchers call a post-human design perspective.
Let's define that, because post-human usually conjures up like sci-fi imagery of cyborgs and artificial intelligence.
Right, Terminator stuff. But in the context of this research, post-humanism simply refers to decentering the human ego.
Okay.
traditional software design is obsessively user-centric. It assumes the human is the isolated master of the system. A post-human approach recognizes that humans are fundamentally entangled with their environment.
So they aren't just isolated users?
No, the residents weren't just isolated users in a forest. The silence allowed them to sense their entanglement with the more-than-human world, whether that was connecting to the thermal dynamics of a melting lake or biologically synchronizing with a stranger's suppressed laughter. They experienced themselves as interacting nodes in a larger system.
That sounds incredibly utopian, but the deep dive into the reality of the residency shows that it wasn't all seamless zen and connection.
Definitely not.
The tech tension is a huge part of this paper, because while the Wi-Fi was cut, human habits do not just vanish overnight.
No, they do not. And the paper is refreshingly transparent about the friction.
Oh yeah, they struggled.
People still possess their smartphones? Without Wi-Fi, residents were secretly clustering together to share mobile hotspots.
Like contraband.
Exactly. They were purchasing highly expensive Finnish cellular data packages just to get a momentary hit of connectivity to the outside world. They even held weekly group meetings that effectively turned into confessionals for their digital dependencies.
It highlights a crucial point, though. You can forcefully introduce Libai into a physical space, but you cannot instantly erase the psychological architecture that algorithms have built in our brains.
It's deeply ingrained.
We have been conditioned to crave the open loop of notifications. And yet, the analog alternatives aren't always a perfect solution either.
No, the anecdote regarding the handwritten letter perfectly captures that paradox.
Yes, the letter. Andres, one of Sarah's co-authors who stayed behind in the real world, decides to do something highly intentional. He writes Sarah a thoughtful handwritten letter, wanting to surprise her at the residency.
A really nice gesture.
Very nice. He wants to leverage the slowness of the physical mail system to give her that tactile, old-world joy of opening an envelope.
He was attempting to send a physical manifestation of Libai, really. A slow, deliberate pause amidst the research.
But the bureaucratic systems of the modern world simply cannot tolerate that level of inefficiency. Because the Finnish residency is so remote, the Postal Service requires the letter to be sent via certified mail. So by the time this carefully crafted analog artifact reaches Sarah, the envelope has been thoroughly mutilated. It is plastered in ugly barcode stickers, tracking numbers, bureaucratic stamps.
Just covered in it.
The administrative need to quantify and track the object completely destroyed the aesthetic intention of the gesture.
It is a striking metaphor for how modern systems handle unstructured data. If an experience cannot be tracked, logged, and verified, the system forcefully applies a framework to it.
So what does this all mean for us? Because despite that friction, Sarah does actually create art.
She does.
She takes those failed Polaroids, peels them apart, and layers them with delicate tracing paper, handwriting the Serenity Prayer in a circle over images of frozen branches. She calls it the subterranean mute.
Beautiful.
And she also creates a 5-minute video called The Snow in March, which features incredibly slow, minimalist footage of snow erasing the tree lines. But I want to look at the tool she used here.
The tech she relied on.
Yeah. She used a high-definition field recorder. She used Photoshop to manipulate the contrast on the Polaroids. She used digital video editing software. She didn't actually abandon technology.
This raises an important question, and it forms the core of the researcher's conclusion. The objective of exploring Libai in HCI is not to advocate for Luddism.
Right.
The researchers are not telling us to throw our laptops into a frozen lake. We exist in a highly digitized society. Mm-hmm. Instead, the authors are advocating for the design of a technical inward turn.
A technical inward term. Break down what that actually looks like for, say, a software developer or a product designer.
Well, currently, the vast majority of our digital tools are engineered as open-loop systems designed for extraction.
Meaning they take from us.
Exactly. They're built to pull your attention outward toward a targeted ad, a breaking news alert, or an endless feed of content. A technical inward turn asks developers to flip that vector.
Oh, I see.
How can we engineer closed-loop systems? How can we design tools that utilize sensors and data not to gamify our behavior for advertisers, but to reflect our own physical reality back to us, fostering inner awareness?
Right, like the noise-canceling headphones. The technology wasn't pulling Sarah into a virtual reality. It was hyper-focusing her attention onto the acoustic reality of the snow falling just inches away from her.
Exactly. The focus shifts from how do we keep the user on this screen to how do we build a platform that gracefully supports the user stepping away?
That is so rare.
It is. It asks designers to code intentional pauses.
Yeah.
to build interfaces that value slowness, that do not penalize a user algorithmically for logging off, and that actively integrates Loop-i to give the human mind the space it needs to synthesize information.
It completely upends the traditional conversation around screen time, honestly.
It really does.
Because the debate is almost always centered on the sheer volume of hours spent looking at glass. But this reframes the issue entirely. It's not simply about less technology. It's about demanding that the technology we do use points our attention inward, toward our physical environment and our internal rhythms, rather than constantly fracturing our focus outward.
It fundamentally changes the criteria for what makes a tool successful.
So to synthesize our journey today, we followed a researcher from a hyper-connected, data-driven world right into the freezing, hushed forests of Finland.
Quite the trip.
Yeah. And we learned that by actively integrating Loop-i, the generative power of empty space, we don't just eliminate noise. We create a massive canvas for deep noticing. We saw how stripping away the compulsion to constantly communicate can actually trigger profound biological and social entrainment. And ultimately, we learn that the antidote to digital exhaustion isn't necessarily fleeing to a cabin in the woods.
Well, that sounds nice.
It does. But it is really about demanding that the digital systems we rely on respect our cognitive limits, you know, embracing the inward turn.
It is a critical paradigm shift. And it leaves me with a final thought I would like to pose to you listening right now.
Let's hear it.
We have extensively unpacked the immense creative power of Loop-i in traditional art, in the acoustics of a snow-covered forest, and in shared social dynamics. But what if we collectively demanded Loop-i from the algorithms that currently dictate our digital lives?
Oh, wow.
What would it physically look like if your social media feed was intentionally coded with empty space? Imagine swiping up, and instead of the algorithm immediately force-feeding you the next frantic video to keep your dopamine spiking, it offered you absolutely nothing.
Just a pause.
Just a quiet blank screen for 10 seconds. A digital sanctuary, giving your mind the necessary space to process what it just saw before you decide if you actually want to keep scrolling.
An algorithm engineered to respect the limits of human attention. That is a brilliant and necessary thought to chew on.
Glad you think so.
Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Before you rush off to your next meeting or, you know, instinctively open another tab, we warmly invite you to just put your device down, leave a little Loop-i in your schedule, and take a moment of silence for yourself today. Catch you next time.